Party, and she's actually from Our House University. Her work has looked at Dalit communities, globalisation, art and development. So we'll hear a fragment of it today.
Well, thank you very much. Actually, this is a completely different project from what I've been working for the past 15 years. And I first like to thank Shirin for inviting me here. Thank you so much. And this is like part of a project which is called Modern and Contemporary Indian Art and the Global Culture, Capital, and the Development of Postcolonial Taste. And it's part of a larger initiative called Framing the Global, which is at Indiana University. So it's quite a rapture compared to my previous work, and actually still ongoing. This paper focuses on contemporary art as a technique of nation staging. As you know, India is experiencing an unprecedented rise to visibility of its artistic production under the form of modern and contemporary art, largely fostered by private capital. I've recently argued that the relationship between art and market in India has engendered an aesthetics of social and economic change. Today, I look at aspects of the nation's aesthetic production, and in particular, I examine India's politics of presence at the Venice Art Biennale. I will do this through the history of its participation at its venue since 1954, which was the first appearance, till its reappearance 30 years later as a government-sponsored national pavilion in 2011. The arguments I offer here build on reflections on the nexus between place, cultural production, and the politics of representation. Venice is not the location of biennales of resistance, as the Venice Pavilion curator, Ranjit Oskote, termed those, and I quote from him, those biennales located in transitional societies that mark the stake of these societies in the global scenario. By biennales of resistance, he means Sao Paulo Biennale, the India Triennale, the Havana Biennale, the Guangzhou Biennale, the failed Johannesburg Biennale, and the never materialized Delhi one. These, he argues, and I quote from him, mark a cumulative counterpoint to the Venice Biennale as the universal template for the Biennale as a form and medium. Their existence demonstrates that there is a substantial known and perhaps counter-Venetian history of the Biennale form that has yet to be narrated. Such a future program of history writing would have to take into account the will to globality expressed through these biennales of resistance, unquote. Well, the importance of this historical project aside, which is actually ongoing, in this paper I suggest that the reappearance of India at the hegemonic Venice Biennale in 2011 led to really important statements on contemporary India and the idea of nation. In the resulting imaginaries, West did not have an ontological presence, but it was actually incorporated as a geographical place of life and work of the Indian artists selected for the pavilion. Thus, Venice became a canvas at disposal to the Indian authorship. Through the selected artists who live both in India and in the diaspora, the curator aimed to substitute a priori national identity with a positionality in which India, in his words, is a conceptual entity that is not territorially bounded. So these decisions offer a reading of the Indian nation through a notion of process geography as opposed to a trait one, as Arjuna Padurai would put it. I also argue that while staging itself in Venice, India did not battle for difference, but it actually offers forms of oppositional knowledge, even when the Biennale venue was not situated in an iconic third world location. So difference disappeared as an imperative, as an urgency for self-representational purposes. In turn, this left room for the will to globality rather than the will to difference as the leading representational principle, thus opening up the possibility for novel explorations of the nation's articulations of self. Art historian John Clark has argued, and I quote, art exhibitions often transparently perform a diplomatic function. They show one society to another, unquote. If there is an art exhibition which has been profoundly shaped and by and intertwined with international diplomacy, international history, it's precisely the Venice Biennale. However, the Biennale is much more than an art exhibition understood as a bilateral show. It's actually a multi-gaze event where optics and counter-optics are dispersed across the exhibiting spaces in the hosting city. Since 1895, Venice has been hosted the Art Biennale, famously or unfamously articulated around national pavilions, which scholars have seen as the direct legacy of the 19th century universal exhibitions. The Biennale's history is intertwined with international and Eurocentric history and has showcased Western art for several decades before opening up to non-Western countries. Although, but still kind of remains, and I think if more and more, one of the most coveted global stages for contemporary art, as I'm sure you know. Here I view the Biennale both as an archetypical form which has known a vast geographical spread and a constant palingenesis, and as a historical formation. In 2011, India was not alone in rejoining Venice as a national pavilion. We had the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Costa Rica, Cuba, and Iraq. This is Wounded Water. So they returned to Venice, these nations returned to Venice after a period of absence, while there were some newcomers such as Andorra, Saudi Arabia, and Bangladesh. This was the Saudi Arabia pavilion called Black Arch. And this is just a glimpse of Bangladesh, the entrance of the pavilion. After the critiques put forward to national representation during the 1990s, the so-called post-colonial decade, over the past years, rather than escaping the national pavilion format, in times of the global spread of contemporary art, an increasing number of countries have actually set up a pavilion. So the Biennale rose from 77 countries, national pavilions in 2009, to 89 in 2011. There could be different reasons as to why a country exhibits itself in the multi-gaze space of the Biennale. For example, India's return to Venice in 2011 came at the end of a bureaucratic impasse where the Indian government finally accepted the invitation from the Biennale, having been invited years previously, but not having managed to put that together, entitled Everybody Agrees It's About to Explode, the 2011 India Pavilion was a belated institutional recognition of the rise to visibility of contemporary Indian art, both in India and outside India. By contrast, China's rising desire of visibility, its need to overcome its isolation, its grand cultural politics, might explain why, when India's presence in Venice vanished in the early 1980s, that of China began through different formats, and that they had the first pavilion in 2003, which could not be staged in Venice because of the SARS epidemic. It would be unthinkable for the Biennale not to have a China or an India pavilion in 2011, but their participation, as well as all the newcomers, has taken place at the time of fresh criticism on the Biennale genre per se, and what it does in terms of experimentation and its intellectual legacy. Claire Bishop has argued, and I quote, "If Biennales at their best sought to create a regime of representation that challenged the dominant mediatic repertoire to generate diversity, to propose a transnational public sphere, then today these roles have been taken over by the museum, ironically the Enlightenment institution par excellence." It's actually the Enlightenment, the long-standing persona non grata, which is evoked by the 2011 Biennale's titles, Illuminazione in Italian, or Illuminations. The Biennale curator, Bice Kuriger, argued that this title encompasses both light, a classic theme which suits Venice, and nations, which are highlighted in this theme. The Venice Biennale, she contends, safeguards national borders at the time when artists become migrants and cultural tourists. However, it's not the old-fashioned notion of nation that she evokes here, but actually the potential of art to experiment new forms of community. And actually, the Biennale curator argues that the desire to abolish the national pavilion is an attempt to delete history. Scholars, Weiss and Skeller, have suggested that unlike other large-scale exhibitions, the Venice Biennale is specialized history, linking heterogeneous temporalities corresponding to the three stages of the exhibition's modern history. That is, the first stage with the national pavilions, the second stage, the post-colonial and post-modern era, until the third stage of the emerging art nations occupy the urban texture of Venice, and different time zones, according to them, mark the history of the exhibition.
But let me take you back to one of the junctures in this history, that is to 1954, when India first appears at the Biennale. As Nancy Jacquet has argued, and I quote, "Nehru embraced the idea of contemporary modern art as part of the global process of economic and social modernization, and he was consistently open to exchange with Western as well as regional cultural centers." So the year 1954 saw an increase of government support for the fine arts. The National Gallery of Modern Art was opened in Delhi. The National Academy of Art was established. And the same year, India began participating to the Biennale, signing a panorama of Indian art of the past 50 years, unquote. And Gulo Thakurta contends how the decades which had preceded these events were critical for the emergence, and I quote, of the aestheticized object of Indian art as the main field for the self-representation of the nation. Long available for nationalism, it now became a vital trope of the new nation form of independent India, unquote. And she actually analyzes two major exhibitions of Indian art which took place in 1947 in London to mark the power transfer, and the same art objects were actually moved to Delhi and exhibited at the Government House. But she also cautions that in Delhi, the modern remains entirely excluded from the spectacle of India's art heritage. And I was quoting from her. So we can perhaps imagine that the enthusiasm and aura and symbolic value around art from these two exhibitions permeated also India's first participation to the Venice Biennale only a few years later, in 1954, the important year. However, on that year, the exhibition space of Venice offered the possibility for a rather different spectacle. In 1954, the Venice Biennale claimed not to be a museum, but a living mirror of art today. And actually, whatever I'm going to read very quickly in this paper is a lot of translation from the text from the Biennale catalogs, which are all in Italian. So the very first time that I'm studying something related to India, and Italian has come as a kind of of help, right? So in terms of spatial analysis, the map of the 1954 Biennale shows that next to the vast space dedicated to the Italian pavilion, India was clustered with Brazil, Vietnam, South Africa, Canada, Finland, Australia, Guatemala, Uruguay, and Indonesia in the Giardini of the Biennale, where all the permanent national pavilions are situated. And this assemblage of the newcomers was placed next to the solo exhibitions by Max Ernst and Jean Miró, as surrealism was the focus of the Biennale that year. The 1954 India Pavilion showcased an impressive lineup of 31 artists, including M.F. Hussain, Newton de Souza, Raza, Jamini Roy, and Amrita Shergill. No text or images accompany the list of artists on the catalogue, only titles of the artwork, and this is applies to all the other editions of the Biennale catalogues, with very few exceptions. In 1956, the next participation,
This is only 10 minutes.
I'll just summarize the history pre 2011. So the 1956 India Pavilion at the Biennale resembles like a Sotheby's, contemporary Sotheby's auction catalog, with again M.F. Hussain, Dinkar Koshwek, Akbar Padalmansi, and Raza. There are very kind of scant descriptions of why certain artists actually have been selected in the various years of India's participation, but they're sort of every now and again there's something kind of interesting comes up about, for example, the inspiration of the Indian artists is something that is kind of reaching out, but it's also essentially Indian. Or, for example, the social necessity of art and how art is, art development is explained in the decades post-independence. It's linked with industrialization, with development. So they're really sort of interesting themes. So I don't really have the time to go through any of this. So I just want to get to the 2011 pavilion. So, the pavilion was assigned the prime location of the Arsenale. The Arsenale is the largest pre-industrial production center of the world. where the Venice Serenissima fleet was built, and it traces back to the 13th century. The pavilion itself was based in the Artiglierie, which is where, you know, the Arsenale workshops were, and it dates back to the 1560s. Indians' return to the Biennale was actually preceded by an exhibition in 2005 called Icon, and also by individual sort of participation by artists. In the choice of the artist for the 2011 pavilion, the curator Oscode explained how he wanted to operate a rupture with the sensationalism of how the world of Indian art is being represented. That is a very market-driven representation with the corresponding narratives of success. In this light, he's chosen four artists, Zarina Hashmi, Pranit Soy, Gigi Scari, and the Design Machine Collective. In his words, all of them unexpected choices from the viewpoint of conventional wisdom. While some of these artistic positions have been incorporated respectfully into the gallery system, both globally and in India, and have received the attention of museums, foundations, etc., they've not been neutralized by the system's embrace, end quote. The artists and their biographies far exceed the vision of a national pavilion as a closed container. Actually, the pavilion exudes transnationality, as the selected artists live in the US, Europe, and India, permanently or temporarily, and travel out of India extensively. Oscode describes this geopolitics of art making as an idiosyncratic line of latitude which connects them across the globe, running west to east to link the theater of life and work across New York, Amsterdam, Kolkata, New Delhi, Kerala, and Guwahati. Three images that's and then fine. Two lines of conclusions. Okay, so this is Zarina Hashmi. It's a 36 woodcuts assemblage called Home is a Foreign Place. She's actually based in the US, I think in New York, and with her, and basically her work is informed by experience of partition and exile and diaspora as a South Asian Muslim. This is a video. This is again Hashmi. This is a video installation by Gigi Scaria called Elevator into the Subcontinent. And it basically takes the visitor to different levels of society in urban India. And this is exemplified by different, you know, change of interiors. Okay, so you get into this lift, and then you have all these images that kind of appear according to the sort of the level of society you're in, basically. Okay, so this is next is a mural called Workstation by Kolkata-born Pranit Soy, who actually lives between Kolkata and Amsterdam, and speaks about multiple temporalities. And I don't have images of the Desire Machine Collective, who are based in Guwahati. You probably have heard of them. They've come to be known for their public projects and politics and experimentation site on a ferry on the Brahmaputra River. And they showed a film called Residue, which is about an abandoned thermal energy plant. So it's a piece of industrial archaeology. Some conclusions. Okay. The very first India's Biennale will open later this year on 12-12-12 in Kochi. The Venice of the East, as the city is called because of its large network of canals. And I'm planning to go probably not on the 12-12-12, but at some point. What may link Venice to Kochi, the first curated pavilion in Venice, to the very first Biennale in India, might well just be the Biennale form and nothing else. More important, beside form, it is what those artworks representing India within India will look like in Kochi, vis-a-vis what India out of India looked like in Venice, which actually interests me. Could the spectacle of India offered in Venice work in Kochi? Who knows? Or does Kochi require a completely different mise-en-scene? This is hopefully the topic for another paper. Thank you very much.